Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder more or less than running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
All right, a very exciting week here on the Rusty Satellite Show. It's our 10th show here on the Louisville.am podcast network. I encourage you to tell your friends about the shows on Louisville.am. We are, as of last week, also on iTunes. And I'll tell you, the people that I talk to in town about the show invariably tell me they don't know how to download the podcast. But it's really simple, especially if you have an iPhone. There is a podcast app in the App Store. You can download that, subscribe to this podcast, and many others here on Louisville.am. Encourage you to do so because we certainly want to build our audience here. We've had a series of great guests and some really interesting conversation here on the Rusty Satellite Show. Now, I want to update before we get into this week's show, and we're all excited because it's football week. Football season starts this week, and I'll get into that a little bit. Plenty of stories about that and excitement around the city about U of L football and more importantly to me and my guest here, the Western Kentucky football season starts on Saturday. But first of all, before we get into the meat of today's show, I want to talk about some Rusty Satellite alumni that made some great accomplishments. Last week we had John Bowl from Wave TV on the show, and he was preparing for the Ironman competition on Sunday, and I'm happy to say that John survived, finished well, did great, and was indeed back on the air at 4 o'clock the next morning after the grueling for him about 12 hours of Ironman competition. Another Rusty Satellite alumni we talked with last week is Ben Rhodes, the 16-year-old race car driver, represents Alpha Energy Solutions, the company I work for. Well, Ben just happened to just go out and win two more races last weekend to bring it to 5 out of his last 6 starts, which is sort of unprecedented in the racing world. And congratulations to Ben. He's really on a roll, and we'll be racing again this week. And one other alumni of Rusty Satellite, you might remember we talked to Nick Weiss, a documentary filmmaker working on the documentary he talked about on the show was The World's Greatest Extra, a young man named Jesse Hyman. Nick's other project was a documentary called The Potter's Field, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. It premiered last night. We're talking on August 28th. He premiered last night on at the Kentucky Center for the Arts, a packed house, and just a very moving, touching film that I'm anxious to get into a little bit later. And speaking of later, we're going to have Angie Fenton on the show again in just a few minutes. We're going to mix it up, try to do something a little bit different with Angie. She's got a lot of things she's been doing. And, I'm sure one of the things we're going to be talking about very soon is, of course, today's my birthday. I'm sure that my guest John Asher didn't know that, but, yeah, it's my birthday, so I'm doing what I love on my birthday. And 53 years old, the same age as actress from General Hospital, Emma Sams. I'm sure you can compare me and see how I'm doing against her. But my real contemporary in terms of, I don't know if you do this with your birthday, but I do with mine. And I'm 4 days younger than Cal Ripken Jr. And he's one of my idols and my heroes. And I always like to say, well, he may have millions of dollars and be a very successful professional athlete, but he doesn't have his hair anymore. So I've got that on him. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit about birthday stuff as well, because it's a great day. I think one of the things about it, as I'll talk about, is the birthdays in the Facebook era are so different, because as we speak, I'm sure as we're talking here on Wednesday morning, I've probably gotten another 15 birthday wishes from people I don't know, and And that's really touching. It makes you feel good, and you know it's your one special day. It makes you know the fact that people in your life are actually aware of your birthday is I don't know. I guess it's a good thing. My mother, you know, bless her. She passed away a year and a half ago, but she was the queen. You know, throughout her life, she was relentless on buying birthday cards and sending them in the mail to people, and it came back to her because, you know, you can ask any of my friends. My mother got a minimum of 3 dozen birthday cards in the mail on her birthday every day up until she passed at age 85. So anyway, well, let's get on with the show. I'm very happy to introduce my guest, John Asher. John is the vice president of Churchill Downs. Tell me, John, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, and happy birthday.
Well, thanks a lot.
I share mine with Jamie Lee Curtis and Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, well, you're doing better than them.
November 22nd, also the Kennedy assassination, so it's a mixed blessing for a young Catholic.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess so. Well, it's good to know that stuff. And now, your title over there, I mean, everybody knows John Asher and Churchill Downs.
I tell everybody, I just answered to John Asher of Churchill Downs. The official title is Vice President of Racing Communications, but I don't use that very often.
Okay. And one of the things, John and I have, go back to our college days at, on the Hill, Western Kentucky University. And, John, we're all excited about the big game this weekend. You and I are both going down to Nashville to see the Hilltoppers whoop up on the Kentucky Wildcats. Tell me what your thoughts are for Western going into the season.
Just really excited about it. It's incredible to have been a part of Western family for a long time, and to see the football program where it sits right now. You know, defeating UK last year, frankly, should have beaten them 2 years in a row. They completed a couple of passes down Nashville 2 years ago. They'd have won that game, but to have the prospect, though, especially what happened in the offseason, Willie Taggart did an incredible job there. And moved on to South Florida, I'll admit it took me about 6-7 hours to come to terms when Bobby Petrino was suddenly hired. But once I finally came to terms with it, I thought it was a really brilliant move. And we'll see how it works out. But to be sitting here having watched Western over the years, especially when they were Division I AA power, you know, more like a Division II type power through the years, and to think that there is a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but a possibility, and I think a good possibility, but just a possibility that the Hilltoppers could be 2-0 in the Southeastern Conference after the first 2 weeks of the season is a pretty amazing thing.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? I mean, I'm with you. It didn't take me that long to embrace Bobby Petrino down there. I really, you know, certainly I believe in second chances, but also believe that it was a unique opportunity for Absolutely. Western to hire a high-profile coach, put themselves on the college football map in a way that they never could have. And there's nothing else they could have done to get this kind of recognition.
Front page in USA Today Sports last week, there's no question it's going to be, in terms of media scrutiny and just media focus, going to be far and away the biggest opening night the team's ever had. And it's essentially their game In Nashville, there'll be a big crowd on hand. I'm guessing about 40,000. That place seats a lot of people, but it'll be a terrific crowd. It should be a great night. Regardless of what happens, it should be a great night.
Right, it should be. I mean, I know that, we're both familiar with what Petrino did when he was here at Louisville. In those games, I mean, my memory of the Petrino era is being up on teams 50-7 and getting – upset because Petrino wouldn't pile on another touchdown in the last 2 minutes of the game. I mean, that's the way those games, in my memory, with Petrino. I mean, he has some personal quirks, and he's not all warm and fuzzy. But, I really believe, all that I've read, and I don't have any personal experience, but it just seems to me that he's contrite and understands that he screwed up, and this is his chance, and he's not. I mean, I think all he has to do now is win.
I think it's a wonderful opportunity for him. He's able to come back to Kentucky, where his family was very happy in Kentucky, and got some opportunity there. Willie Taggart did not leave the cupboard bare. There's a lot of good players down there, and maybe not the numbers that they'd like. I'm pretty confident they're going to be a good bit better next year than they are this year at this time, but just hoping they're good enough on Saturday. It's going to be fun.
All right, well, we'll get off that topic. I did want to say, I read one thing. It gets you so excited about the season when it's starting because I read one report that said Western was one of the 10 teams in America that had a chance to go undefeated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wouldn't that be wild? So, of course, Louisville, our own Louisville Cardinals are the top one. But we can't talk all day about football, John. I just learned that Churchill Downs is doing something it's never done before. Yeah. Tell me about that.
We're getting ready to hold a race meet in September, a third meet on the year. Traditionally, when the track started back in 1875, we had what was essentially the spring meet around the Kentucky Derby. Some years later, we came up with a fall meet. A few of those run in September, but we've had a few dates through the years with a date or two in the month of September, but we have a new 12-day meet starts September 6th. The September meet, 12 racing sessions, Friday through Sunday schedule. And it's really, really new to the market. And I'm pretty confident this time, fewer than 2 weeks out, that 60 to 70% of the Louisville market doesn't realize it's there. You're kind of conditioned to think toward the last week in October to start that fall meet. But we're working hard to get the word out and excited to get it started.
Once they hear about it on the Rusty Satellite Show,
clearly that'll put us over the top.
It'll move away up.
What I'm counting on. But we did it for a couple of reasons. First of all, in Kentucky racing, there are some financial issues. Turfway Park, which had held September mm-hmm. dates in the last few years, was struggling to put on a quality meet, and Horsemen had asked us about the possibility of running a meet, so we took a look at it and also got excited about the opportunities. You've got in September, your best chance for some great weather and new product in the market. A couple of night racing sessions in there. The September 7th, the first Saturday, will be a night racing
session. That I wanted to ask you about.
And the 28th, the last Saturday. So,
okay.
So that product's been obviously a super successful thing for us in the 5 years we've had it. And,
okay. So I know the 7th, mm-hmm. In particular, there's a UofL football game across the street. So it sort of reminds me of UK's Keeneland UK double. Is that what you're doing?
Those were beautiful things. Especially I know the Georgia fans especially were excited when they would come up and play, and they'd have the doubles there with Keeneland in the afternoon and UK at night. And we're hoping we can work those things out. TV is such a driving force now that it's killed a lot of those great Keeneland Southeastern Conference doubles. So you have to see what the schedules are. But on the 7th, we're going to tap into that football season. It's going to be college rivalry night. We're asking fans to wear colors that night. We always have a theme for the night racing sessions. We're asking fans to wear their colors and proudly support their teams. As you come into the track that night, fans are going to be asked to tell us which team is their favorite. We'll notch that vote, and at the end of the night, we'll give away some scholarship money. We're giving away $10,000 in scholarship money. The school with the largest number of fans there will get $5,000 in scholarship money to do what they want to. The runner-up will get $3,000, and the third place will get $2,000.
All right. Well, I know you'll tip the scales for WKU on that one.
I'm just hoping I'm going to tell my friends to now get there, wear the red, because we want to beat UK twice in 1 week. If possibly can. First in Nashville, then.
Yeah, that'll be good. Then UofL get to beat them. The third week, down in Lexington, so that'll be good. Well, good. Well, that's very exciting. I'll take my red towel over there to the track.
Yeah, that's 7th. We'll open on the 6th on Friday. Mm-hmm. Post time for the races on the 6th will be 1:45 in the afternoon, and then of course the night racing card will be 6 p.m.
Well, great. Well, that's very exciting stuff at the track, and really look forward to it. I guess, just one last thing. I guess the whole idea of having concerts over there seems to have – that was exciting for a while, but no concerts in the foreseeable future?
We haven't shut the door to any, certainly. And we've talked to folks about a few things. It's got to work right for us. We had the Stones right off the bat, which was a magical moment that night. I don't know if you were there, but it was and I think it was special for the band too when they realized they know about Churchill Downs, the Kentucky Derby, and the Twin Spires, and I think it was special to them. They mentioned it a couple times during the night, and of course played Dead Flowers, which includes a reference to the Kentucky Derby Day in there. And we had the Police a year later, and of course had the Hullabaloo, the big three.
Right now, that's that, I remember that. I saw Bon Jovi there, and I saw my favorite.
It was amazing. We lost a little money on that one, but. But it worked, and I think we're open to those things down the road. The third racing meet might make it a little more difficult for those the big stage. Remember the covered part of the turf course,
right?
Because we've got more racing days now and less opportunity for that turf course to rebound. But I could I don't think we've shut the door in any way to concerts out there. We're just waiting on the right opportunity to pop up and the right setting.
Okay.
We're still thinking about things like that. Churchill Downs, when we revamped the track and from the 2001 to 2005 period, and there is
some construction going on right
project,
now, right?
Got a project going now on the grandstand, an area that has been largely untouched since the last expansion down there in 1953. It's way overdue, but we're adding a big second floor. It's called Grandstand Terrace. There behind the grandstand seats up toward the top of the stretch. Part of that terrace will overlook the Derby starting gate there at the quarter pole at the top of the stretch. I'm really excited about it. There will be some new seating, about 2,400 new seats, but I love the space more than anything. And we're going to have new food and beverage stations up there, new restrooms everywhere. That's been the big issue over the years is the restrooms. You had to be a bit of a brave person to go into those restrooms on big days. But
I think I've been to every restroom over there, and I know it's just...
We're increasing not only the numbers of them, but either creating new ones or completely revamping the old ones. And I'm really excited about the projects underway now. We're having to demolish a bit of the old grandstand, although not the seating area. The area's in back to get that done. But it'll be finished for next year's Derby. And I think it'll be like everything we've done at Churchill, including that new plaza area that we opened up this spring, which is going to be a great concert spot for us. And I think a great spot for some smaller shows or maybe smaller festivals. I think this space is going to lend itself to some other activities on down the road that we haven't identified yet. But I love the space, and I'm really excited about it.
Well, John, we just got a few more minutes here, and it's great to be updated on Churchill Downs. But you're talking about concerts, and people that know you know that you seem to have this world of culture at your fingertips. Based on your Facebook post, you seem to have great quotes. I used one the other day from you, and very aware of new music and all that. I mean, where does all that come from?
Just loved music since I was a kid. I remember scrapping around the house when I was a teenager and running into, and this will reveal my age, which is in your neighborhood, but moved a piece of furniture, and underneath there was a single by the Everly Brothers. And I asked my mother, I said, "Where did this come from?" She said, "Well, you bought it when you were four." And we had a little drugstore, sold records in my hometown of Litchfield, Kentucky. I grew up near Litchfield. We had a little drugstore there that sold records. And she said, "I picked that one out before I could read." So obviously a fan from very young, watched the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, have loved music all my life, big part of my life when I was at WKU, and continues to be. And I love the opportunity offered by social media, Twitter and Facebook, specifically for me, but also Google Plus to kind of share those things that I love, and hopefully, hopefully I'll expose some people to something they'll love.
Right.
I'm excited about a concert coming up by the National at Iroquois Amphitheater. I'll be going to in September. So they're a fantastic band. Love them.
There you go. That's what one of the things I admire, John, because in my 20s and teens, music was everything. I memorized albums and all this stuff, but I guess I got stuck. I'm still listening to Steve Forbert and Delbert McClinton.
I'm buying a lot of vinyl. I sold thousands of records a few years ago when I thought the vinyl medium was dead. I thought that form was dead. But now I'm going through great used record stores and bought a Steve Forbert just this week. In great shape. But I'm kind of replacing that stuff and realizing a couple of things. How much I love the vinyl. I'm glad it's still there. But also I've realized flipping through those endless crates of records that I've bought a lot of bad records over the years, and I'm kind of glad I sorted them out. I'm able to kind of go back and now and get the ones.
And all that trouble of getting it out of the thing and putting it on the turntable.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you one story. We'll go. When I moved recently, last April, I got tired of carting. I had a stack of albums that I carted around for 30 years from apartment to apartment to house and all
that.
Same
thing.
And I just got tired of it. I took it up to Half Price Books. I took my big prized possession, all these albums, a big stack, probably 3 feet high, and turned them over to the guy. And he spent his 20 minutes on it, came back and looked at me and said, "I'll give you $20 for it."
I took mine to a friend, Ben Jones, who runs a place called Better Days on Bardstown Road. Lovely shop, and Ben's done a great job kind of succeeding ear ecstasy, I think, a little bit in terms of vinyl fans down there. He's got a super shop, and Ben, I've known since I was in college at Western. We worked at a record store together down there at WKU. So I've known him through the years, and he's the guy I took all mine to and sold him 2 years
ago. Yeah.
And now I'm back buying them from him again. And it's quite possible I'm buying some of the ones that I sold him, getting them back. But you know, in terms of the music, though, I'm fascinated by a lot of new bands, a lot of new artists. I'm with you. I'm still with the Springsteens and Dylans. Kind of,
yeah.
I think they're, you know, those guys are turning out amazing things at this part in their lives, at this point in their lives. And there are a lot of those artists that have some real longevity and really mean something today. But I'm always fascinated to hear a great new band, and I love to listen to just about anything. And that's I love to share that on social media. I had a friend in the media business the other day. He called me he said you're kind of the oldest kid I know. He's kind of stepping into social media, and I've always kind of always embraced it.
Well, that's
it's a great way to connect with people.
That's a nice thing to be known by, John. Afraid we have to wrap it up here, but on the I'm writing this down, the oldest kid I know. That's a great thing to be known as. I saw something on social media the other day about a retrospective on the movie Big, and that's all about, you know, keeping your mind and your spirit and young and all that. So
this is such a great town to with things like Idea Festival and New Louisville. It's such an amazing time to be in the city of Louisville. I feel like the luckiest guy in the world to have the job I do, working at Churchill Downs, is something I've loved since I was a kid. And be able to have these experiences in this city. We got a great town here.
Yeah, we really do. And a great radio show here. Here at the Rusty Satellite Show. Thank you, John, for being
on. Going to iTunes today.
There you go.
You love Louisville. You want Louisville when and where you want it? There's something new every day at Louisville.am.
And thank you very much, John Asher, for coming into the Rusty Satellite Studios here at Louisville.am. And this section of the show will be yours truly, talking about some things that have caught my eye recently, and I'm very happy to be joined in this segment by Angie Fenton. Angie, welcome.
Good to be back here.
It is. Maybe we can, make this a regular thing. But we're going to do the show a little different this week with Angie. She's going to be a part of two segments here and all that. But the first one I'm going to sort of lead, and I'd really like to talk about something. I know, Angie, you know something about, but last night I was fortunate enough to go to the premiere in Louisville of a documentary called The Potter's Field. And as you know, or what, maybe that would, maybe you can set this up for us, Angie. What is this about for our listeners who don't know?
I mean, the premise of it, these are young men and women, young women as well, who are serving as the people taking care of the homeless, you know, people without families at the end of their lives and giving them that dignified burial. And I mean, just listening to them tell their stories of how they've been affected and impacted by what they're doing, it's tremendous. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Well, having seen it, I can tell you it's very emotional. Mm. And it really is. The premise answers the question, what happens to homeless people when they die? Mm-hmm. And last night at the Kentucky Center for the Arts, it was practically sold out. The place was full. There were parts of the film where I know people were crying. It was just amazing to see. The question I wanted to ask, and I didn't, they had a Q&A with Edward Hevron, this young director, after the show, and I guess he was on your
he was on
TV
Great
show.
Day Live, yes, and it said this was his first ever documentary,
right,
which is amazing.
Yeah, it's really great, and the parts that are memorable to me, in addition to the young people, the high school kids, and they showed a packed room. This is all volunteer, and they pack it in. And what these young people do is act as pallbearers, mm-hmm, and go to these funerals in Potter's Field in West Louisville. And it's very emotional. But within the documentary, there are some other stories that are very touching. One is an interview with a homeless man who was a staff sergeant in the Army, mm-hmm, and just had a run of bad luck, and he finds himself on the street. There's another character named Bandana who lives in the West End and talks about his former life with a wife and two cars and a house and all that. And now he's squatting on an abandoned property in the West End. So I think, what I would say about it in terms of recommending it to viewers, or to our listeners, is to really, it's really something important, I think, to see. If you have, there was mention of there was a lot of people there from the Coalition for the Homeless last night, and they spoke, and it's all about this compassionate city movement here in Louisville, and I know, you talked to some of the people involved this morning on your show. What was your impression of the people involved, or who did you have on?
Oh, I'm going to forget names. Lots of students.
We
had the man who you mentioned was the one responsible for making the documentary, and then we also had one of the instructors who was on.
That instructor was from Trinity High School.
Yes.
And he was just blown away. He was part of the Q&A section. And really interestingly, in the Q&A afterwards, there were a bunch of people that asked questions, of course. But at the end of it, you could tell this was unplanned, but a strange-looking man walked on the stage and sat down, and you could tell he wasn't part of the program. People were looking at him kind of funny, and finally they went over to him with a microphone and said, "What are you doing here, sir?" And he was Vic, and he was a friend of the director, and he's homeless, and he just had promised to come, and so I don't know what motivated him to get up on the stage and go, but... The project is just really an impressive project. And for followers of this show, you know that a few weeks ago we had Nick Weiss, the documentary producer. He is the co-director of this documentary, The Potter's Field. And I'm just really happy for him and for this young director to have accomplished something, you know, really so important.
And so something else, I mean, in addition to what these just phenomenal people are doing for homeless people, I mean, in the last moments, providing some of that dignity, I thought it also forces us to take a look at what it means to be homeless and to just confront our own beliefs when you see people as people instead of represented in, you know, statistics and things. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times people I feel close to have said things about, quote unquote, the homeless
right. In
this category. You know, lazy, and this is what you don't work hard, so this is what happens to you. There is no such thing as just a one catch answer for all of it.
Right. Every story is unique. And you know, the thing, there's a bunch of things that impressed me about this documentary, but one was the selflessness of the students. Now, mm-hmm. I wasn't able to ask whether, you know, these kids, they don't seem to be getting anything from it.
No.
Like for community service credit or anything like that. There was one young lady from Assumption who just went and got flowers donated and took those to the graves, mm-hmm. and, you know, by herself. It's such a selfless thing to do. You know, the impression also was, and especially from the teacher at Trinity, that it has an impact on these young people, and it brings them down to earth. And it says, one of the messages of the film is no matter what you do in life, at the end, you're all alone. And a lot of these indigent people that die in other cities, they have mass graves, they have all these awful things that happen in other cities. And Louisville is one of the few cities, it was pointed out, that actually does something for the dignity of these individuals.
Right.
So. It's a very enlightening thing about our city that I didn't know about, and I was really fortunate to get to see the film.
Well, I'm glad you did. Now I really want to see it.
Okay. Well, switching gears here, Angie, there's another story in the news I thought would be interesting for us to talk about. It came up this week that in the Jefferson County Public Schools, in high schools, we're talking about high school kids just now, in Jefferson County Public High Schools, there is a movement afoot to allow students to use their cell phones in class. Now, my immediate reaction is, are they crazy? But, you know, I've read the story as it's been reported in the media. You know, it does, I'm coming around to thinking how it makes sense. What's your view on that?
As I'm sitting here with my open iPad and iPhone.
I know. Would you pay attention to me, please?
This is so I have some of our topics up in front of me. But, I mean, on one hand, at first glance, it's like taking your phone to dinner with friends, you know, and you set it on the table there. And unless you're a doctor or your kid's going to call or something like that, you're likely to use it in some way that is not what you should be focusing on. And so that's at first glance. But on the other hand, I mean, this thing that I'm holding in my hands is a tool of education. I mean, one of my favorite things about the iPhone is I don't have to sit and wait for an answer to a question. I can look it up. I can find answers. I can find a variety of answers and perspectives.
And that's the sort of argument that, these eight principals that appeared and are trying to make their schools the exceptions. I was happy to see Iroquois High was one of them.
Right.
The idea of using it as a learning tool, using the calculator, using all these functions that are on the phone, and there are companion pieces, I guess, to some of the things that are being taught in the classroom, mm-hmm. which is good. My question is, how do you keep the kids from, like, texting their buddies over on the other eye? You know, the old-fashioned thing when we were in school, it was like I passed a note, right? But now if you could, you know, text the cute girl over in the third row.
And how many of us haven't sat in a business meeting before? I'm looking up some information, and you're texting or you're Facebooking. And we're adults. Like, we may have our reasons for why we're doing that. It'll be interesting. But I was just with a woman who spent $150 in addition to all the other fees she's had to spend for her son who goes to one of the parochial schools. And that was just on a calculator. And we were talking about, there are apps. She could have paid $2.99 and had a scientific calculator with all the bells and whistles on it and so many free apps that are actually educational. So, we'll just have to see how it goes. Yeah. Kids are going to be kids, regardless.
And the principals also argue that it is such a problem in schools of teachers having to police the use of cell phones.
Right.
That it's a discipline issue that could potentially go away if you just said, okay, you can use your phone. So now we don't have to police you. We don't have to threaten to take them away. We don't have to do all that. You could just say, hey, it's legal. I think maybe the people that are fighting legalization of marijuana might take a note from this attitude that if you just took the rules away, the problem might not be as severe.
Right. Well, I'm all for it. At least you can try it. If it doesn't work, try something else.
There you go. Okay, well, this is Greg. I got one other topic that I don't think you're going to be that interested in, Angie, but I just wanted to put my two cents in on a sports topic on the University of Louisville and University of Kentucky game. It was announced recently that game, which has been such a big hit as the first game of the year when it's played in Louisville, and basically a move by the Atlantic Coast Conference, UofL's new conference in the SEC, where UK plays, they're going to move that game to the end of the year. You have an opinion on that, Angie?
I'll let you keep going.
Well, you know I do. I think it's really a travesty. It's going to lessen the importance of the game because, you know, a few years ago, Kentucky, because they got tired of getting beat, moved the game back to the third game. They wanted to get a couple of wins under their belt before they took on UofL, which – in recent years, UofL, this is cyclical. It'll probably change. But right now, UofL is on top. UofL is a lot better. This game is going to lose its impact and its importance being played at the end of the year because there is a very strong likelihood, in my opinion, that by the end of the year, number one, people around here are more focused on basketball. Number two, by the end of the year, UK is probably going to be about 2-8 or 2-9. And not going anywhere, and people have already turned their attention away from football. So I think it really damages the impact. It lessens the impact of the game, and I understand why it's being done, but I still think people that are justifying it as a good thing, so that it'll create more interest. I think it will create less, but I guess we'll have to see. At least this year, we're still playing in Lexington the third week of the season. And next year it'll move to the end of the year, so it'll also be cold and all that stuff. So you won't be going anyway, will you?
It depends on. I like those rivalries, but again, I'm from Michigan. I've been here since 2002. I feel like this is the city that I belong to, but I still kind of take a step back and am enamored with the rivalry on all fronts. I love listening to our local sports talk shows and. Just
over
because it's
over
a little it's just different from where I came from, but you can be sure that when it goes down, like when Michigan was playing Louisville. I cheered all the way for Louisville. My stepdad didn't talk to me for 2 days.
Well, good. Darn you, you better pull for the
always.
Cards. And which reminds me of one last thing I want to mention in this segment. There was a New York Times article this week about the prominence of the University of Louisville Athletic Department and how U of L actually helped ESPN become more important and ESPN helped Louisville. And the downside, the only downside of that is that the football team had to play some games on Tuesday nights, which, you know, we've kind of gotten used to around here. You know, it's like there are places where, oh, if you don't play on Saturday afternoon, it's not college football. Well, you know, U of L certainly showed the nation that being flexible on scheduling was a real boon to the athletic program. So I would recommend anybody, I think we're going to have a story on that on LouisvilleKY.com, a link to the article in the New York Times, but a very significant piece, I think, and really one that illustrates all the advantages the University of Louisville has taken by being a partner, so to speak, with ESPN. So, all right, Angie, well, let's take a break here, and, you know, I know that in honor of my birthday, I'm going to let you take over the show.
I get the gift. I get it.
So I hope you have something good planned for the last segment of the Rusty Satellite Show here. And we'll be right back.
Learn about the movers and shakers in the Louisville business scene with Startup, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. A new episode every Tuesday at Louisville.am.
Okay, Rick, I'm Angie Fenton, and since it's your 53rd birthday, you're letting me take over for you. So this is what we're going to start with. Two topics. They're not as heavy as the topics that you sometimes bring up, but I'm going to actually time us. We get only 60 seconds to respond in total.
So, I feel the pressure already.
Okay, first one. Paula Deen, they've dropped the lawsuit. Both sides walked away without any money changing hands. Your thoughts on that? Because she ended up losing so much.
I really should have an opinion on this, shouldn't I?
Mm-hmm. You should, because it seems like the whole world has had an opinion.
There are some things I just don't really care about. I hate to say that. I think it relates to her making a racist comment or something, and she loses her job over there. That's a consequence for bad behavior. I don't know the details of that, and I'm sure you do.
Well, I mean, honestly, I've always thought as this was going on, no, we don't want to know that our celebrities that we enjoy and, you know, people in the spotlight say things that are unsavory. And, I mean, she did. She said and did some things that were racist and has done that a few times at different points. But I also think that she got raked through the coals in front of the world.
Yeah, and I think one thing about I can't speak about celebrity, and I think as a celebrity, anybody that's a celebrity, if whatever you do is magnified, and that's unfortunate or fortunate, right. however you see this business. I hope this is not your next topic of this business with Miley Cyrus the other night. You know, I know if you know Miley Cyrus personally. And she's not any monster. She's not she's not a creep because she did this thing on this big national stage, but she's getting a lot of publicity for it. And because she's famous, it's just magnified, and it's what everybody wants to talk about.
That actually is the next, and only because of this. I mean, I did not watch. I did not watch. I've seen little clips and photos and things. And I like you. I just don't. I don't care. You know, when people are saying that she is the epitome or the embodiment of the downfall of our society and things, turn your TV, don't tune her in, don't buy her songs, stop giving her publicity, stop reading the articles about Lindsay Lohan. Stop. One, I don't like to read negative garbage anyway. How would we like it if our own junk got put out there for everybody to judge?
Well, this gets to the media. I'll tell you, Angie, it was a great piece of satire on I believe it was The Onion this week. It was the CNN person saying it was an awesome piece because they're trying to justify why they made Miley Cyrus the number one story on the CNN website at a time when there's serious issues going on around the world.
Right.
And you know, it's time for us all to take a step back and look and say, darn it, just because people will click on this doesn't mean that we should promote it on our news site.
Right. Sometimes the best way to make things go away is to just turn the other way. She got all eyes on her, and we're still talking about it. So she achieved her goal. And if you watch her Twitter page, you can tell she's given herself a pretty big high five.
Miley is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, maybe it's going to help her career. I don't know.
We shall see. But ultimately what I want to talk about, okay, again, you're 53. How do you feel?
I feel great. I've never felt better, you know, not physically because, you know, I had knee surgery this year and all that. But, you know, I'm doing things I like to do and having a lot of fun. So, you know, 53, you know, it's a good year.
When you look back, like, you remember, I mean, 53 sounded like it was ancient, except now we know it's nowhere near ancient. But if you could look back at a point in your life, any advice or words of wisdom that you would have told yourself that you wish you would have known?
Well, you know, I've always been kind of a rebel, I guess, and maybe I shouldn't have ticked off my bosses at a couple of spots along the way in my career. But you know, words of advice, I don't know. Be true to yourself. Do the sure. things that you believe in. And you know, try to act with integrity. Say what you're going to do. Do what you say you're going to do. And you're going to have conflict in your life no matter what you do. And it's how you handle that conflict and how you come through it, I think, that leads to, you know, whether you're successful. I as a father of three boys, I know I try to impart some wisdom to them. And when you have kids, they ignore you sometimes. But sometimes, you know, all these things that you say, they come back to you. And I'm really proud of all three of my sons. And sometimes, you know, I'll hear things back from them that I remember telling them when they were 10 years old. And now that they're, you know, my sons are 23, 22, and 15. Now they're that age, you know, it's really gratifying, I guess, to know that, you know, some of the things you said along the way sunk in.
Okay, and just to be a little nosy in a public forum, at 53, you're single.
I'm very uncomfortable here.
You're very uncomfortable.
Go ahead.
It's
I'm
my
just
turn. Dating at 53, what is that like here in Louisville? Because you hear all over the map different opinions.
Wow, what a topic. Mm-hmm. What is it like? I've tried and decided I don't need to do any of the online dating stuff right now. I've been there. I've done that. I don't know. It's really different at this age because I think I would tell you, Angie, that the primary difference is that as opposed to when you're 23 and you got all these possibilities in front of you, at 53, it's you know, here's my list of requirements, and you know, I hope you don't violate one of these. I hope none of these deal breakers apply to you, because we'll just stop it right now and not go on. So the search for somebody that you can actually go out and have fun with, and that you know, they don't, you know, the obvious deal breaker is like somebody smokes, and you know, I can't stand that. So I'm not even gonna give you the time, but you know, I guess I would go on and say the other thing is age, and you know, people have different reactions to age. Well, how young is too young? How old is too old? You know, I've dated an older woman and I've dated younger, and it really shouldn't matter, but a lot of times it does, especially in the beginning stages when you're deciding, is this somebody I could see myself with?
Oh, so. I committed the ultimate horrific faux pas this past weekend. Thankfully, it wasn't on camera, but I was filming something for a national network. And right before, I'm getting ready and pre-interviewing. And, oh, dear goodness, this gorgeous, gorgeous woman with this very, very attractive young man. And I had said it was a competition, a horse competition. And I said, oh, did your son just compete? It was her husband.
Oops.
It was her husband. And I know better than that. I don't make assumptions. I'm someone who, I mean, we were talking before we went on here live, you know, what is too old? Well, it really depends on the person. I mean, I've met 70-year-olds who have more life and vigor than some 30-year-olds. So to me, age is, it's just a number, and it depends on how you wear it. But in that case, I mean, if I could have just been swallowed up by the earth, I would have. I still cringe at that. I won't make that mistake again. But at the same time, what if it is somebody's dad with his daughter and I say, oh, is that your wife? Like, either way, you're going to gross somebody out or offend someone. So I've got to figure out a better way. But age, I think it's mattering less.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, there are like I know women and I guess men are like this too. I say I've got a number that's not, mm-hmm. you know, if on online dating profiles they say I'm looking for a, you know, woman age, you know, and you put blank to blank, you know, and you think, well, she looks cute, but I'm outside of her age wishes.
Right.
You know, how's that going to affect her? Is she going to say, well, you shouldn't have called me because, you know, you're 2 years older than my upper level. You got to figure out a way to get to know people. The challenging thing, I think, for single people that aren't in online dating is finding a way to meet people mm-hmm. outside of that. You know, of course, you know, I guess as a more public person, you know, I have a lot of things I do, and you do too. You know, you go to events all the time. But, you know, that's an age old. That's probably been a problem since our parents were doing this or whatever. You know, it's been a long time. It's all, how do I meet somebody? How do I do that? That's why online dating, I think, was created.
And since it is your birthday, can you share your wish?
My wish? Oh, gosh. Oh, you got me stumped, Angie.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that something? No,
stumping
not dead
Rick
air.
Redding. That never happens. Well, you can keep thinking about it. And I will have to just tell listeners, by the way, that was it was very sweet, because as soon as I asked you about dating, you started squirreling, as we used to call that in school, messing with your keys and your pen. I got you on the little bit of the hot seat there.
Yeah, I know. That must be what it's like to be grilled by me
by you.
Sometimes. I think my wish, I had something on the tip of my tongue that, you know, I just, like everybody else, you hope to continue to be doing things you enjoy. I really wish I can get a sponsor for the Rusty Satellite Show.
That's a great wish.
That would be the ultimate, because I really enjoy doing this, and I want to keep going, and I don't want it to be a hobby. So hopefully some people out there are finding value in it, and they're downloading it every week. You know, I don't know if you know, but we're now on iTunes, so it's very easy on your phone to download the podcast. So if you're listening, you already figured it out, but you need to please go tell your friends to pick up the podcast and listen to this show, and the others here on Louisville.am are really good shows. So anyway, Angie, you've done a great job. Now
Thank
I can
you.
Feel comfortable, like going on vacation or something.
Oh, there you go, taking over.
And you can just take over the whole show. But, yeah, go ahead and wrap up the show, Angie. And thanks again for coming in and hosting with me.
Well, very simple. I'm Angie Fenton with WHS 11 and other things, depending on the day. Rick Redding, happy birthday to you.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, @RickyRedding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city. Time.